Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of Positively Trek. I'm one of your co-hosts, Barry DeFord, along as always with Mr. Dan Gunther, a slightly more raspy and husky Dan. I think we've had a bit of forest fires up here, and it's turned Dan into a bit of an Alana Miles. I'm enjoying it quite a bit, that gravelly voice. How are you doing, Mr. Dan?
Not too bad. I feel like if I really wanted to, I could pull off a pretty good Kate Mulgrew impression. I won't subject people to that, but yeah, I was thinking like there's some lingering allergy stuff, but you made a good point that yeah, the smoke is probably really affecting me, so I think that might be a lot of what's going on. Unfortunately, for a lot of other people in our neck of the woods or near to our neck of the woods, smoke is kind of the least of their worries. Smoke is just the byproduct of what they're going through. So it sounds trite, but my thoughts definitely go out to those who are imperiled by the fires. And I'm so sorry and really, really hope that the situation changes for the better very soon.
Absolutely. And I fully agree. And definitely this is an opportunity, dear listener, to lead with a little bit of Starfleet, right? If there's a disaster, what does Starfleet do, right? Whatever they can to help. Mm-hmm. So obviously, you know, we're all in different contexts and situations in our lives. And sometimes it is just thoughts and well wishes we can send. But if more is capable, please do so. There's obviously a number of aid organizations, both local, provincial, and federal, you can always look into. And if you're listening from another country, chances are part of it is burned too. So also have a look and see what's going on in your way to help, because that, of course, is the best way to stave off any bad feelings. Another bad way to stave off feelings is to watch Star Trek. In today's episode, we're going to be looking at a bit of a retrospective of this season of Strange New Worlds. Of course, there is a bit of an elephant in the room that I'm going to bring up a little more and have some bit of discussion on, the fact that we may probably not be seeing whatever conclusion we get from this cliffhanger until probably, I mean, at the very least, 2025. Mm-hmm. So more to talk about there, of course, later in the discussion. So if you have not seen any of the episodes in Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2, stop now. Find a way to watch it, whichever way you find and wherever part of the world you're in. And then join us again as we start talking in depth, because there is going to be nothing but spoilers ahead. So with that, I think we can move on to the news. Interesting little bit here about the flying Save Star Trek Prodigy banner that flew above Hollywood the other day. What do you think? First of all, that released on my birthday of all time. Oh, so that was pretty great. great birthday present for me. What do you think? Do you think that'll make a difference?
Well, the executive producers certainly seem to think it will, and they've been very thankful for the folks behind this. First of all, though, happy birthday, by the way.
Oh, thanks.
Surely the best of times.
That's always a fun time of year, and hopefully, as maybe a late birthday gift, we get eventual confirmation that Star Trek Prodigy will be purchased and aired by one of these conglomerates, one of these groups that they're trying to attract. So yeah, they flew this banner, hashtag Save Star Trek Prodigy, over Netflix, over Amazon, basically any of the streamers that they hope might pick this up. So I'm sure a few of them looked up and talked about it a bit in some context in their offices and stuff. And yeah, this story has definitely been shared far and wide on social media, and definitely noticed by, like I said, the showrunners and producers of Star Trek Prodigy. So very cool. And it definitely,
charming.
Yeah, charming. Absolutely. And it goes to show the depth of the Star Trek fandom as a whole, but also the fandom that's rallying behind Star Trek Prodigy in particular. So it's inspiring a lot of the same sorts of movements that, going back to the 60s, the impending cancellation of TOS did, right?
It is reminiscent, and it is sort of like a nice, for me, like nice little diversion from a lot of the yucky stuff happening. I'm actually just looking at the Trek movie posted on an app. I don't know which one. The flight path, and you see the plane take off from the airport, does a couple circles to ascend, and then it flies over over LA, over Santa Monica, and you see it does like doodle doodle doodle, goes like a bunch of circles, and then it zooms off. I just think it's charming. But I think, you know, I mean, what it really does is it kind of reminds me that we are in a fandom that is full of just really nice people who like doing nice things. And it is nice. And it's something that I enjoy and feel good about. And I do think personally, and obviously it was a bit of I buried the lead there, I do think this is going to make a difference. I think this is showing just the level at which people are willing to go to see good television, right? And good entertainment with an actually positive message.
Absolutely. And I think Star Trek Prodigy is kind of, you know, while it was airing, was kind of on the vanguard of that movement, right? Introducing a younger fan to Star Trek and really modeling that behavior. And as the kids in the show, and I mean, we've talked about this a million times, the kids in the show learn about the values of Starfleet and what it means to be a part of the Federation. As you know, they're teaching the viewers that and showing that we could have a better world and things could be different, right? So
100%. So let's hope we get some more traction on that. Honestly, I'm thinking I'm crossing my fingers. That's all I'm going to say is I'm crossing my fingers.
You're here. And the producers, the writers and everything remain very optimistic that it will be picked up. So we're just, you know, we're impatient. We're waiting for news along with the rest of you. So yeah, it'll happen though, I think.
Well, we are looking at some news again on Star Trek Day featuring that Lower Decks theatrical screening.
Mm-hmm.
57 years of Star Trek. I like to think that's a pretty cool little piece here, but it is going to be an animated celebration. They're saying this one, Lower Decks Theater screenings. This year, Paramount is also celebrating the 50th anniversary of the animated series itself. So it is kind of neat seeing an animated series from back in the day, of course, and now. And you've got that amazing poster where you can see characters drawn the way that they would have been in the animated series to some degree from the looks of it. Those tiny, beady little black eyes that they had. Are you an animated series completionist, Dan?
I'm a bit back and forth on that. There are a number of episodes, a couple in particular, that I think are actually very, very great episodes. Yesteryear, written by DC Fontana, of course, floats to the top of many people's lists. Mm-hmm. I would say, you know, watch it once through. I totally get it if it's not your cup of tea. It's kind of hard to accept with our modern sensibilities, the animation style, the music, and that sort of thing. If you look for it, there's still a lot of love there and a lot of that classic Star Trek stuff. I don't know. I enjoy it. If I'm in the right mood, I really enjoy it. if I'm in the wrong mood, I can kind of get like, ugh, I don't know. The universe where all of the sky is white and the stars are all black, like, of course, that doesn't make sense. But anyway.
I think for me, probably the most like memorable Star Trek animated series was How Sharp a Serpent's Tooth. That was written by an indigenous writer, and it had actually an indigenous bridge officer, if I remember. And yeah. I'm not remembering names or anything. The premise had something to do with Aztec gods. I think Quetzalcoatl was in it or something like that.
Kukulkan.
Kukulkan, there we are.
Or if you're William Shatner's Kirk, Kuklakon, apparently.
Oh, Bill.
Yeah.
Anyways, moving on. So yes, there's going to be, my guess is this is pretty much like the closest we're getting is, like, I think there's going to be, and it already would have happened, there was a screening in Calgary and in Vancouver. Are those the only Canadian locations?
I think so, yeah. I looked it up. I mean, obviously, there's going to be none in Grand Prairie. But I was thinking, you know, maybe Edmonton, right? No such luck. I do remember watching, I think it was the Menagerie Part 1 and 2 when TOS Remastered was coming out. And that was in Edmonton. They had one in Edmonton. But no such luck with this. But yeah, lots of different locations. Many in the U.S., of course. Columbus, Dallas, Denver, Philadelphia, Phoenix, San Diego, St. Louis, and Washington, D.C. And then in Canada, we have Vancouver, Calgary.
Obviously, the other cool part is Star Trek Day will also feature airings, special airings of Star Trek Strange New Worlds on CBS itself, beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. And they're going to be doing the first two episodes, Strange New Worlds and Children of the Comet, back to back. So that's sort of, I guess, to entice people to then hop on to their streaming platform and get a membership to watch the rest is what I would understand. And I think there's going to be a sale, like a Star Trek sale, like merchandise sale as well that day. So September 8th is the big day there.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you so much for downloading this episode of Positively Trek. We truly do appreciate each and every one of our listeners, and I'd like to especially thank our Patreon supporters. Thank you to our Constitution Class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Marin, and Paul D. Kinnear. If you'd like to become a supporter of Positively Trek and join our crew, please go to patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can get early access to episodes, exclusive content, shoutouts, associate producer credits, ad-free episodes, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you all, and live long and prosper.
Well, that's it for the news. So I think it's about time we hop into our main topic.
Sounds good to me. Let's do it.
So Star Trek Strange New Worlds Season 2 is at an end, Dan, and I think we have another solid season of entertaining and fun episodes in albeit tiny arc of episodes, but that's okay. I'm 10 is better than zero. So overall, let's maybe start. What do you think is going to be one of the biggest takeaways from Strange New World Season 2 for you?
Well, I think kind of similar to Season 1 for me, the strength of the show for me has been advancing these characters' stories in ways that are unexpected, which I have to think is hard to do for a prequel, especially for characters that we know from later iterations or earlier iterations. I'm continually impressed with their character development and how they do things and make it fit into what we've seen before, but not necessarily in ways that we would expect, right? TOS, for example, a lot of those characters, you know, very kind of, if you weren't Kirk, Spock, or McCoy, you are fairly thinly drawn and not a lot to go on. So fans over the years have really filled in that backstory with kind of their own things, maybe stuff from stuff that's considered non-canon. And what Strange New Worlds has done has been to populate that backstory, but really surprising me in maybe adding context to something that I thought about one way in TOS, but now realize has a whole nother layer to it that makes me think of another way. So I was really impressed with that with Discovery when they were in the 23rd century and with season one of Strange New Worlds. And I just really see that continuing with season two. I think they've really got that down. And I mean, your mileage may vary. I know there's people that disagree with me on that, but I think they've done an amazing job of making it all fit.
I agree, obviously. obviously, we are a happier podcast on this, but even if we had, and I think we can have a few criticisms, and mm-hmm. there are a few that I would bring about. But I think for me, the biggest takeaway, and the one that I appreciate the most, is a nuanced way of looking at canon that I think is finally kind of permeating and working. And it started, I think we talked a bit about this with Discovery. I think it did the most to challenge canonical understandings of Star Trek. Obviously, the look of the Klingons is sort of the big one there. But there's other ways that they've managed to do that. And I think by sort of banishing themselves into the distant future was kind of a way to finally shake free of all the chains and restraints, right? But obviously, with Anson Mount's portrayal of Pike, no one wanted to see him leave. And they went down that rabbit hole of continuing on in trying to create that sort of Star Trek-like bridge between the 1960s and now. And, you know, just the other episode, you and I were talking about musical Star Trek, and you look at how much music was in the original series, like full-on, like, minutes-long songs with, like verses and bridges and, like, choruses that get repeated and stuff and go on. So I think Strange New Worlds took a lot of calculated and strong risks. It's able to work on sort of some floating signifiers that exist with some of the crew now at this point, because they are just sort of effortlessly cool. Ortegas obviously is where I'm pointing in that direction, but I think we've seen other characters show how cool they can be. So yeah, the challenging of canon, not taking itself quite as seriously all the time. My favorite episode, hands down, was those old scientists. This is the direction we can move in, right? Kirk looks different. Uhura looks different. Scotty looks different, right? We're letting it go, and it's nice. I'm really happy to see that.
Yeah, I feel like there's definitely a spectrum of Star Trek fan and how seriously you take the canon thing. Like, I have seen comments from people that like can't even accept that Pike looks different, that it's not Jeffrey Hunter on screen. And I mean, how the heck that would work, I have no idea, until maybe the day that, you know, the holodeck becomes, well, I'm deep fakes now, maybe, I don't know. But, yeah. You know, so there's that extreme end that if there's any deviation whatsoever from, you know, a visual thing or something like that, that it's just completely unacceptable. And then, you know, there's the other side of the spectrum where people say that, you know, they shouldn't adhere to canon. They should just do their own thing. And who cares about old Star Trek? And I'm definitely nowhere near either side of those. I'm kind of right down the middle. Like, storyline and that sort of thing, I think, is important to adhere to. But when they do things that challenge how I interpreted something, I'm kind of impressed that, like, oh, that thing that Chapel said in that episode of TOS didn't mean what I thought it meant. It actually meant this. And that's kind of cool.
I appreciate your point in the sense that it again helps us kind of look at things from other angles. While I was doing my research in TOS there, looking at the musical Star Trek episodes, because I don't typically just recreationally watch episodes of the original series. Like, my go-tos, as we've mentioned many times before, is TNG and Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And honestly, there will be times I'll hit Enterprise a little bit too when I can, but, you know, I don't really go that direction. But even looking at the portrayal this series of Dr. M'Benga versus how they have portrayed him now in Strange New Worlds, took a bit. It kind of took me out and made me rethink when I saw his character and being like, this is what he's capable of, you know, now that we can see him from another aspect. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the way that they are sort of dancing with the canon and allowing there to be a little bit of tension too. I think there needs to be a bit of tension because it forces us to have to really consider it. Like, I didn't quite buy it to begin with, mm-hmm. right? The idea that M'Benga is this like war-torn, war-ravaged guy who can take out a small platoon of enemies with, you know, with relative ease, you know, and then he's this soft-spoken healer, right? It's important, and I think it's a good way of like you said, kind of taking things and moving it in other directions. What characters would you say really stood out to you this season?
This season, one that really stood out to me, who I was not necessarily huge on in the first season, and I think this was kind of by design a little bit, La'an, Noonien Singh, Christina Chong, a really, really breakout character this season for me. I found myself absolutely loving every time she's on screen. From the beginning where the Enterprise is kind of going off to save her, I was like, oh, okay. But then a couple episodes later, we get Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, her jaunt into the past with Kirk. And that was so good. She was so incredible in that episode. And I make no illusions that she ever saw this, but when I first watched that episode, and I watched it a little bit before it had actually aired because of the screeners that are provided, I jumped onto Twitter and I messaged her. Her DMs are open, apparently. I messaged her and said, I don't normally do this, I'm sorry, but I just watched this and your final scene, I just had to tell you how amazing that scene was. And yeah, like I said, I make no illusions that she ever saw that, but I was like, I was compelled to just, that scene where she calls Kirk, the prime Kirk, sees that he's alive. And he of course does not know her. Yeah. And then as soon as she turns it off, she just loses it and starts bawling. I was just, man, oh man, can she ever act? And can she ever sing? Wow. Anyway,
you're right on all fronts. She really stole the show this season, I think, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So any other, what about her character, obviously, outside of that, would you say you'd be looking for in a, I guess, in at this point in time, yet to come third season? What would you be looking for most of all? Immediate moments notwithstanding, what kind of arc would you like to see? Or do you think they're going to pick another character to kind of bore in on a bit more?
That is very only 10 episodes to play with, right? That's kind of the thing that we're dancing around a little bit here. I feel like various characters will kind of come to the forefront and go to the background. Ortegas, I'm looking at you for very different real world reasons. She was kind of in the background a little bit this season.
Yeah.
I would love to see a continuing kind of her coming out of her shell. We got that glimpse of her in an alternate future, right? At the end of season one, where I think I actually saw online somewhere, somebody was doing that thing where you're not really watching the episode completely attentively and stuff. And they actually said, like, who is that character? She reminded me of Christina Chong's La'an a little bit, but, you know, she seemed different. And it's like, no, that was her. She's so different when she plays that kind of open, bubbly, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word, but that very extroverted version of her character that her current self is very much not, right? So we've seen that she's really capable of huge change on that front. And if that's somewhere her character wants to go, I want to see her realize that, right? And that looks, I it looks good on her. She wears it well. And I'd love to see her, as she sings about in that episode, could she be the person who takes those chances and opens herself up? I want to see that. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. You've really kind of, I don't know, I'm looking and I'm like, nah, you've kind of hammered it out here. I think that that we've seen, again, I think, an ensemble cast start to form out of this group in a lot of ways. And once again, I think we might see characters who we've lost, you know, definitely make new appearances. And then obviously the reimagining of characters like Kirk and Uhura. I mean, obviously Uhura was, she was last season too, but you know, just the idea that we're getting to see characters we would recognize, or I guess in this case, our parents and grandparents would recognize, but being characterized slightly differently. I mean, obviously 2009 had recharacterizations as well. And I will say that I think that Chris Pine did a fantastic Bill Shatner Kirk in a lot of cases. But I digress a little bit. So for me, I think probably the character that stood out the most to me would be Dr. Mbenga. Mm. Watching him struggle with post-traumatic stress and how exactly he conducts himself when in very, you know, sticky situations that are in peacetime and whatnot, and how one can kind of return to those things, those darker abilities when necessary, and know that they kind of lay under the surface. He definitely became much more of a deep pool, I think, in a lot of ways. And I think he was acted absolutely perfectly. I think that Babs Alassamakan is a extremely sharp actor who is capable of holding variably like the same facial expression, but have it mean completely different things. Like, you know, that one part where they're in that hallway with Chapel and he's like killed, I don't know how many Klingons at this point, and he kind of like looks over at her with that, like that same face he looks at people with, but there's so much different in it. It's really well acted. He was very compelling. I think I thought about Mbenga a lot because I didn't fully agree with what they were doing with him, but I think for that reason I paid closer attention, and now I love it. So They did what they were supposed to, I guess, in that respect. I would like to see Mbenga maybe work with people a little more moving forward, in that sense of like where health isn't necessarily something simply physical, right? Now, he is not a psychologist, so he can't necessarily do psychological work with people. He is a physical doctor, not a psychologist or a psychiatrist. But I do think that there are certain elements that he might be able to work in a little more moving forward. I often think about O'Brien kind of being sort of a prototype of a character dealing with PTS in certain ways, especially on that the episode of the of TNG when Marco Limo is the original Cardassian bad guy.
The wounded.
Is that the... Yeah. Yeah, is that the correct one where O'Brien confronts him in 10 Forward?
Yeah.
Or is that a different Cardassian?
It's a different Cardassian. It's one of his underlings, but Babs was incredible, I think, as Mbenga. And yeah, like you, it took me a little bit to kind of get used to that. And he's the kind of character, like he's in two episodes of the original series, but you don't really know a lot about him except that he did an internship on Vulcan or something like that. And like, that's about it. And he knows to slap Spock really hard to bring him out of a healing trance. But I think he's brought an amazing depth to the character. And you mentioned the Lower Decks crossover episode, Those Old Scientists, earlier. I just want to, it was in reference to another character, but I love Boimler's part in that episode. And I think we can kind of apply it to our impressions of Mbenga and other characters that we know, where he sees Spock in this case acting a certain way and says, "That's not Spock. That's not how I remember him acting." Basically as a proxy for a lot of us in the fandom who are watching this going like, this isn't how I know these characters. This isn't how I remember seeing them in the original series. And something that kind of blew my mind, and I had never really thought about it before, is like, even a character like Spock that you've seen in all of these episodes and all of these films, how much of his life have you actually really seen? Like, if you read about an historical character or somebody you've idolized for years, if you go back in time somehow and just spend 2 or 3 days with that person in their life, they are going to confound your expectations in ways that you can't even think of. So I think that's perfect. I think that makes a ton of sense that we actually had that perspective of someone coming back in time and saying, this isn't how I know these characters. I've read everything about this character, and they never mentioned once that he laughed or smiled, or in the case of Mbenga, that, you know, he was haunted by his experiences in the Klingon War and all this sort of thing. So I loved that perspective. I thought that was really cool. And I had to say, you know, watching that, looking at Boimler, I'm like, oh, I see what you're doing there. And I like it.
So I was going to say what episode stood out, and this was going to be my one I was going to say. So I appreciate you, you know, kind of lacing that outward. I'm sorry, lacing that out in the sense that I think there is a bit of a tongue-in-cheek aspect to all of this, whereas maybe to some degree pacing got a little jarring when you went from those old scientists to Under the Cloak of War to Subspace Rapid City to Hegemony.
Yeah, a little bit of a yo-yo there.
Oh my goodness. Like, use the clutch, you guys. Seriously. So, you know, I mean, again, what are you going to do with 10 episodes, right? You're going to have to do that there. You can't like have a nice, you know, little filler episode like they would do every now and again, like a holodeck episode during the Dominion War or something. I think that's what those old scientists was trying to do, was to say, you are not necessarily going to know precisely what your hero was up to on a day-to-day basis. And you need to understand that having heroes kind of makes you vulnerable to extreme disappointment, shock, horror, frustration, and existential dread. In certain cases, you know, you are going to encounter people at different points of their lives. Just like you're going to find that gets realized in a lot of ways with Spock, that he is a dynamic character who, like, if we think about it, what really is necessarily outside of the norm here? If you think about Spock and all the stuff he's done, if you look at his entire life from, you know, his inception as a character in TOS to now, right? He's died several times, or twice, I guess, if you count the JJ verse, right? And come back to life once from that. And he's worn many hats. And so, yeah, to see him in a slightly different part of his life, I think about my own life. And boy, I wouldn't want to, I don't know about you, Dan, but would you want to like spend an extended period of time with 17-year-old you?
Oh, God, no. Other than to maybe slap him upside the head.
I wouldn't have much to say to him other than like, you need to get your act together, man. So yeah, I guess that's the point of this is I hope what this does is it sets a nice tone. I think that's a nice episode to give people, you know, that kind of under the surface messaging on how we should be approaching fandom. And yeah, be more excitable and excited about people flying airplanes about saving Prodigy and stuff like that, right? Rather than quibbling over small things. It was really fun watching Boimler mince around the Enterprise though.
Yeah, 100%. I guess, yeah, that's my... You could get all bent out of shape over every little thing that you perceive to be a violation of canon, this almighty C word, right? Or you can be like Christopher L. Bennett, one of my favorite Star Trek authors, who seems to use every novel he writes as a platform to explain away some inconsistency in a really creative and fun way. This is a bit of a diversion, but I love what he did with the post-finale Enterprise novels, where, you know, the different insignia for different starships, right? Well, yeah. There's a number of founding members of the Federation, and the Starfleet Arrowhead Delta that we know and love was part of the United Earth Space Probe Agency logo. So he said, okay, well, that's the exploration arm of Starfleet. And he took the Constellation one and said, like, well, the Andorian symbol kind of uses loops and circles and stuff. So that's the Andorian fleet joining the combined Starfleet as the defense arm of Starfleet. The, like, bar of the Exeter was Alpha Centauri, and they're in exploration / administration. And the weird little kind of rounded one that the Antares crew wears in Charlie X is from the Tellarites, because it kind of looks like a porcine hoof thing. So they're sure. Like, oh, that has to do with, fleet resupply and stuff. Cause they were a freighter or something, right? Like that. So in One Fell Swoop, he explained away non-canon, of course, but he explained away why there are different logos for different ships in TOS, but also why sometimes you see people from another ship and they also have the Arrowhead symbol. of the Enterprise. So it's not that each ship has a different thing. It's that these different parts of the fleet, and a century on, they're more combined, they're more diversified as far as races, but those divisions of the parts of the fleet still exist or something. It's like, that's brilliant. Why not use these little weird cannon bumps in the road as something to launch a fun explanation off of and say, like, well, we know it's this way, but why? Let's try and rationalize it. I think that kind of exercise is fun. I love it.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. While you were saying that, I was thinking back to the Enterprise episode arc where they explained away the Klingons' lack of wrinkly foreheads, mm-hmm. right, with the virus-y, whatever the heck that was. And I think that's perfect. And you know, to not have too many of those Klingons around in this iteration or this period of time that arguably they could be, I think it's perfectly fine. And it explains away something that, to me, honestly, doesn't need explaining. Like, the Gordon look cool. Those reimaginings and stuff are fun. And I like that there are people out there who want to kind of wrap their head around that sort of thing. So the other piece of this is, like, you know, so obviously we have our sort of lighthearted episode, and then we have these kind of more serious, darker, some of them very dialogue heavy. Like, I'm thinking about Ad Astra per Aspera, very dialogue heavy. And I quite enjoyed that episode. I thought it was, you know, a little measure of a Manny in certain cases. I like a good court drama. What about you?
Absolutely. I think when that episode first came out, I said it was the best episode of Star Trek to come out since Deep Space Nine went off the air. And I honestly meant that. It was, I think, a very high bar for the season. And I think I haven't done my season rewatch yet. Like, at some point I'd like to rewatch the season before we get into the next one. And unfortunately we'll have lots of time. But yeah, that episode was incredible. And I think, even though it has lots of really good company up there, I think it's the best courtroom episode in Star Trek. It's taken me a while to come to this conclusion, but I think it edges out Measure of a Man for me. And I love the Measure of a Man.
Well, I mean, it does sort of deal with humanity in both cases, right? And maybe we'll dive in a little bit on this episode right now. You know, the idea of, you know, the Illyrians and genetically modified human beings. And obviously there's some deep and very heavy Prodigy elements to this as well. I think it deals with sort of somewhat, or at least parallel, would you say, like, parallel moral conundrums?
Definitely. I mean, there's very obvious parallels to things happening in our modern world that are both implicit and explicit in that episode. Absolutely.
That too. I think, you know, the concept of what exactly sits within the boundaries of what is human and what are humanities and what is humanity and stuff like that. I actually love, and I was thinking about this because it has stuck in my head, going back to 2009 Star Trek, when Baby Spock is in his little learning pit, whatever that thing is.
the Vulcan says, learning pits.
Yes, the Vulcan learning pits. Yeah, I feel like you could do a real big stir fry in one of those if you wanted to. Anyways, if you haven't seen the movie, I'm sorry. It's just this gigantic field of metal, and then there's these like pits with like screens in them, like convex pits or concave, whichever, inward. And there's like screens everywhere, and there's holograms, and little Vulcans are just answering very quick trivia for the most of it. But there's a point where he says, "What makes something sentient?" Or define sentient. And he said, doing something that is morally praiseworthy without it being morally obligatory. And I think that's really important in terms of what sentience is, you know, an alligator or a Gorn protecting its young is instinct, right? Mm-hmm. It's not doing it because it's like, my babies are cute and I love them, like, in the way that we would understand it, right? It's protecting its progeny. And I would argue human beings do the same for their young as well. They will protect them no matter what at all costs. But there's something to, you know, an alligator looking at a puppy and not being like, aw, and, you know, instead just chomping it up kind of thing. So it's this idea that we're capable of doing good things without the desire of doing something or getting something in return.
Returning your cart to the corral at the supermarket when no one's around to tell you to do so.
Exactly. You know, but what I'm kind of getting at here with what I got out of Ad Astra per Aspera, which is lovely, is this idea that in the case of an Illyrian or a modified human being, they are still capable of sentience. and they are still capable of good. And the fact that they have certain advantages doesn't necessarily preclude the fact that they are going to capitalize on those advantages in a negative way, and that we need to start seeing advantage that some people may have, rather something to be stifled or to be shut out, but to be incorporated. And I think there's a lot of connective tissue between that argument and sort of how things go in the first season of Prodigy as well. Would you agree?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And yeah, that, I mean, that is very much a thread that runs through Prodigy. And interesting that there's these kind of parallel things that Star Trek on various iterations seem to be kind of contending with a little bit.
It has a lot to do with the human condition, I think. And obviously, that's what they're actually exploring, folks. They're not in space. They're in the human condition. That's what they're traveling through. All those aliens you're seeing are just different versions of what humanity could or might be, right? I think in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And there are Gorn within us, trust me.
Oh, yes.
Burning the planet down. But anyways, the whole idea of what Star Trek is truly exploring are these questions, and for them to return to them at different times, I think it's interesting, because what was happening during the time of Measure of a Man, but the idea of, you know, we were starting to awaken to this idea of artificial intelligence. I think it is a contemporary episode, or at least close to a contemporary episode, with TV shows like The Terminator, or movies like The Terminator and RoboCop, where we can see what else technology can bring. And Data provides us with something wonderful, something beautiful, something charming, but also something unique, right? You can't mass produce Data like that. I mean, in the comics you can, obviously, but in this respect, I think this is the idea that uniqueness is the thing that Data is looking for within the arguments of Measure of a Man. He's not just Pinocchio with his strings, right? And I love Riker's arguments in that, and he actually kind of convinces me how good he does it. But I think when we're looking at the court case that's happening in Addis Burra, we're looking at sort of the opposite of that. It's like, you're too unique, you can't be here. You're too special, you can't be here, which... yeah, it does sort of beg that question of, like, what are the margins of humanity then? And that's ultimately where Star Trek is exploring, is within those margins.
That episode, it's one that I really want to revisit again very soon, because it touched on so many of those issues and some of the language that is used there, right? Like, you know, she didn't choose to have this done to her. She didn't. For all intents and purposes, she was born that way because she was born into the society that did this at birth kind of thing, right? So, you know, the parallels there, and for what we're dealing with on a number of levels in current society, right, is pretty obvious. But I also like your point about, you know, the bleeding edge of technology and that sort of thing, like with AI, with Data, but also we could very well see in the next little while, you know, the worry was a few years ago, right? Designer babies. We have the technology to maybe do some of this stuff now. And, you know, it's been a little quiet on that front for a little while, but that's all still there, right? So.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, I guess, to kind of move in a certain direction, you know, I think the idea that Lon has to understand is there's a certain product that she is of a certain eugenicist movement, right? and I would be personally, you know, vehemently against the concept of eugenics, and that disability is actually something societal, not necessarily something purely personal and a personal issue in a lot of ways. And I think that in this, what we're looking at, not so much as someone who's genetically modified for the sake of their, you know, that eugenicists movement, but the idea that you're right, she didn't choose any of this. She didn't go in willingly. And in this case, you know, we can also see, and as an educator, I know that there are people who are on the other margin, right? There are students who are challenged by curriculum, and there are students who are unchallenged by curriculum. They get it. They want to move on. But now they're stuck, you know, a Ferrari in an area where there's a bunch of, you know, little tiny Volkswagen Beetle bugs or something like that, right? Like, there's the other side of it, too, that we need to accommodate for. And I don't think it's necessarily outside of the realm of possibility to do that, even for the gifted or those who have certain advanced, you know, advantages that other people might not, especially if they're 100% bought in to the society that they want to be a part of, like Lon is, number one is, and such, right? So I think that's maybe, if I was to kind of like qualify my point a little bit more, that's kind of where I'm getting at. But you're right. I mean, there are people who do want to, you know, make, as we call it, you know, designer babies and stuff. And that's something that really frightens and concerns me, because I don't think that's necessarily the direction we want to head in. But also to the same, you know, idea of how technology can alter us, I think there are people who are born with an inborn nature that isn't necessarily best expressed within our society. And sometimes using medicine can help them manage that and help them explore and understand and express who they truly are. Mm-hmm. So it's a nuanced one, and that's the best part about Star Trek, right? It's all of the nuance. I liked the nuance in Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow, where Lon, continuing with her little story here, where she literally has to work next to the man she loved and lost, and here he is again in a completely different context. I do have to say, the actors between the two of them, the chemistry between Kirk and Lon, pretty steamy.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. My goodness.
And I mean, the two of them both really, really bring that in really unique ways, you know, like Laon's kind of awkwardness, maybe, around Kirk when she meets him late in later episodes. I think there's two separate occasions in the episode Subspace Rhapsody where, and I think it's both to Number One, when Number One says something or is picked up on something and she goes, "What?" Her little innocent, "What?" It's just so good.
Breathy North Londoner.
Yeah. And, you know, say what you will about Paul Wesley, I think this season he has killed it as Kirk. He is absolutely Kirk in my mind. I was a little unconvinced in the finale of season one, just slightly. But at the same time, I also held in the back of my head, I know we're going to see him in season two, and I feel like in season two, we're going to see why this guy was cast as Kirk. And we did, because that man, for all of Kirk's attributes and things that make Kirk who he is, Paul Wesley has the charming down pat. He has got that Kirk charm, and any scene where, you know, he's not flirting with Laon, if you rewatch it in the context and know where he's at in his life, he's not actually flirting with her, but boy, is that man charming. But I think he's just as charming when he's talking to Spock or when he's talking to Uhura, and there's no kind of interest there, which is probably why Uhura mistook him for, you know, trying to hit on her. But like, even in the episode Subspace Rhapsody, watch the way he talks to Spock when Spock explains what's going on and says this improbability field is blah, blah, blah. At the end of it all, Kirk looks at him and says, "Oh, it's very good. You almost made me understand it." That same charm. That same charm is there as when he's talking to Laon. It's just part of who he is. And because of where Laon is and her thing, that chemistry, it's just immediately magnetic between them.
Yeah. I agree. I like to think, are you familiar, and listeners, if you're familiar with Chris Isaak's song Wicked Game, where he kind of Roy Orbison's a song about not wanting to fall in love with a person, but he clearly has. And there's that kind of dreamy Telecaster guitar playing in the background. It's a good song. Check it out. Wicked Game by Chris Isaak. It's the song that floats in my head, thinking it's the song that's floating around in Laon's head in Lost in Translation. When she has to work with Kirk, and I think of like the "No, I don't want to fall in love" kind of thing.
Where it's
just like, oh, come on, get out of my face. And you're right. He is, I think the word is charismatic, right? Mm-hmm. If I was on a spaceship and anyone's Kirk was wandering around, I would probably be somewhat man crushing on him for sure. Right. I mean, I loved Chris Pine's portrayal. My favorite actually is when he's getting hypo sprayed over and over again by Bones, and he's leaning up against him and he's like, "Yeah, that one too. That stop it" is very like, it's very Kirky, or the "you call us a favor" like those little bits, right, that I think were really good. Or something about the Kobayashi Maru, and he's eating the apple and he's making sure that Uhura uses the honorific captain and stuff like that. Like it's those little bits here. And yeah, he's got those nice, funny little quips and stuff like that. But also, yeah, he gets your attention. That is for darn sure. So yeah, anyone who's saying he's not doing a good job or anything like that, I mean, sure, fine, cool. It's all good. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah. I mean, there's some things that are a matter of taste, I guess, but I think if you read a character description of Kirk and he's doing that, he's not doing William Shatner, but he's doing Captain Kirk. Well, Lieutenant Kirk, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
whatever. So what do you think here? And you know, obviously at the end of the last season, we lost our engineer. What do you think about our new engineer that now that she's had a couple of episodes, 10, around 10 to, because she wasn't in every single episode.
No, special guest star. And yeah, I think was in 6 or 7. I can't remember. But
yeah, what do you think about her timelessness? I have found that very enjoyable, to be honest.
Yeah,
especially her interplay with number one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that to be a really interesting aspect of her character and something that I think they could have a lot of fun with and have played with in interesting ways. I like that idea of someone like she, there's that great example where she says, I think it was to Boimler in Those Old Scientists, where she says, someone I used to know once said, if you, and I'm going to very badly paraphrase this, but if you're not the person you want to be, pretend to be them until you become them or they become you. That was Cary Grant that said that. And I love that they didn't like spell that out. But if you look up that quote, that's a quote from Cary Grant. And she's just like, some guy I used to hang around with said this once. And so I love, you know, using it in little tongue-in-cheek ways like that. I also loved that, you know, she figured into the plot in Tomorrow and Tomorrow and Tomorrow and mm-hmm. apparently, you know, has appropriated a number of things from the Louvre over the years.
Yeah, that's great.
I think she's a fun character and I hope she's in season 3 quite a bit and continues to be on because I think she's brought a really interesting aspect to the show. And that's even putting aside the fact that, like, how wonderful is it to see an older person hanging around with all of these beautiful young people and just being integrated into the crew and having a wonderful role to play in the show? You know, it's something that you don't see enough of in most modern shows that are of this ilk, right?
This is a bit of a deep cut, but she sort of gives off a bit of Betty White, Hot in Cleveland vibes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If any, just somewhat, I'm too old to be reverent at this point, and I kind of see the forest for the trees, and I'm a little bit above everyone else's little personal machinations in a lot of cases, but I'm also not going to necessarily pick at every single one, but there's always going to be one I'm going to pick at the most.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think it is the idea that perhaps what she sees in number one is something of herself. And that's kind of where I'm getting with this a little bit. And I think, yeah, we might not see her again, you know, if it's another 10 episode arc. My suspicion is that she'll probably get, you know, 5 or 6. But in that, I think we'll see her pass the torch, first of all, to Scotty. At least I'm hoping. And I think we'll also wind up seeing her bid us farewell. I hope it's not through death, though. I hope it's just her moving on to go do something else, which would be pretty wicked.
Yeah. The Star Trek universe being what it is, could we see her pop up in Lower Decks and be like, hey, I remember you.
Please. Oh, please. Oh, my God. Please. I love, like, okay, seriously, Mike Mahan, if you're listening, just do that.
Yes. 100%.
Bring her into Lower Decks.
Yeah. But to respond to what you said, I love her interactions with the crew and number one in particular, that when, for example, Una is kind of ranting at her a little bit and says, you know, you have crumbs on your shirt. When did you eat? You're like a space hippie and all this kind of stuff. And she has this look on her face when she's looking at Una as she's saying this, like, I'll just wait for you to be done. I know you need to do this. Okay, you done? Cool. Now, this is what this is really all about. You know, I gave you a C in this and you're mad about that, but that's not actually what it's about. You're mad because I'm not Hemmer and you miss him. Can we move on now?
Yeah.
I love that. And her whole demeanor in that same episode, for example, when she's talking to Uhura and she says, I remember Hemmer. He was one of my best students. No, that's a lie. I'm just saying that because he died. He was actually just an okay student. Right? She kind of cuts through the BS a little bit, and I love it.
Yeah, it's a bit of an irreverence that I think plays well, especially with a Western audience. You know, she's kind of a singular person doing her own thing who, you know, shoots from the hip. And I think that can be refreshing sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not going to talk a lot about Pike in this. I know he is a love interest. I found his whole arc in this to be kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to kind of focus maybe the last bit of our discussion. Maybe we can bring Pike up a bit in this, but I need to talk about Uhura.
Yes.
I think we need to, we need to get this very central character. She very much weaves through a lot of the episodes. Obviously she's at the center of some of the episodes, Lost in Translation being among one of them. I didn't necessarily like the visions that she was getting throughout all of it. It gave me some Discovery vibes of just how violent it can get in certain cases. But at the same time, I understand they have an interesting story to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Also, her singing in Subspace Rhapsody was, I know everyone's giving a lot of Christine Chong a lot of love for her very wonderful voice, but I gotta say,
Keep Us Connected is an incredible song, and she is amazing in that.
Absolute bullseye. So overall, you know, I think giving Uhura a ton more to do even, right? I mean, it's not like she was necessarily a tiny character in TOS really either. She sang a lot. What do you think? Do you think they're going to keep the Uhura train going, or do you think they're going to give her some time off? And what are some more notable moments from the season for Uhura for you?
Yeah, I really, really appreciate Celia's portrayal of Uhura. And I think like everything about her just really channels the spirit of that character. And even right down to the choice of wearing her natural hair, you know, like she was actually given the option, unlike Nichelle Nichols, do you want to wear a wig like she did, or do you want to wear your natural hair? And she opted for the natural hair, which I really appreciate, because that's something that Nichelle Nichols has said that she wished she could do. And I think Star Trek The Motion Picture might be the only time that she actually was able to have her natural hair in the role. But beyond that, like the singing, obviously, but the prodigy aspect of her, the fact that she's brilliant, like we saw hints of that in TOS with Uhura being able to kind of crawl inside the guts of her console and rewire it in ways that the engineers couldn't figure out, kind of thing. Seeing that kind of carried through, I really enjoy that. And also the fact that she didn't necessarily want to be in Starfleet, but has kind of made her home there. I think that's an interesting aspect of the character. As far as next season, I feel like we're going to see a carry on through of Uhura, simply because I'm assuming she's going to be there for the duration until, you know, we get to that TOS era. I don't know. I feel like she's so interesting as the character. I'd love to see more. But I'd also love to see more of all the other characters too. So I'm kind of, again, we just need more than those 10 episodes, which ain't going to happen, unfortunately, but that's okay.
I think hers is a story of someone really and truly finding their place, right? And, you know, obviously Keep Us Connected is kind of the bonk bonk on the head. Here I am. I found my place. And I think that's absolutely wonderful that really, if you think about it, for a lot of her career, Uhura, much like Spock, much like Kirk, spends a lot of time on that ship. My goodness. And many iterations of it too, right? So I think that I wouldn't be totally upset if we saw her kind of pull an Ortegas in season 3 and just kind of like be part of the ship now. But at the same time, you know, I think they could add a little bit more to her. They always are good at giving Uhura something to do. I think she has also blended the two kind of major portrayals of Uhura quite well. She does add a little bit of the hectic 2009 JJ verse Uhura to the Uhura that we saw in TOS, which wasn't not like, it's not that she wasn't confident or anything like that, but I mean, I found 2009's Uhura to be a little more decisive, and in this case, I think I saw that a bit more with this iteration of her as well. I mean, I think about way in like the cinematic Star Trek when they were in the kind of the edge, the twilight of the TOS era, and she's still having trouble translating certain things. I think that was in...
In Star Trek VI?
Yeah, so in Star Trek VI, she's still having kind of issues with that, whereas, you know, I think she would be maybe kind of a mix between that and the absolutely fluent Uhura we saw in the JJ-verse. Anyways, I think that Uhura's we're going to see a lot of her. Last but not least, I think we can probably end on Pike. What did you think about his love arc in all of this? And I mean, I can't necessarily say I didn't see this coming. Tragedy awaits the man wherever he treads.
Yeah, there's definitely some fear of tropes rearing their ugly head. And, you know, they didn't necessarily fridge the woman character in service of the man's story. But at the end of the season, I will note that Captain Batel is in a fridge. She's not dead, but she is. So maybe a little bit of a bad taste in the mouth there, but I don't know. The one thing I would say, and I've said this before on the live show that I do with Brandy for each new episode that comes out, this is going to sound bad. I don't really care about Pike and Batel's relationship. Like, it is not like a storybook romance to me that I think needs to be fought for tooth and nail. I'd be totally okay if they just kind of went their separate ways at some point. I wouldn't be extremely broken up over it. Not to say that they don't both deserve happiness, and they seem pretty okay together, but you know, I don't know. I would root for Spock and Chapel's relationship before theirs, and we know it's not gonna last. So
Chapel knows.
Yeah, Chapel knows. With you, yeah. I really like Batel. I think she's a great character. I enjoy watching her, but yeah.
Yeah. Make her more than Pike's love interest.
Yeah. The one thing I will say too, just generally about Pike himself, is his indecisiveness at the very end of the episode of the season felt very artificial to me. I don't know. That felt like raising the stakes for the sake of raising the stakes. I don't know. It didn't feel real. And I was kind of thinking back on it. Pike comes across as a little bit wishy-washy over the course of the season in a number of episodes as well. For example, the episode with Manga and his war history and stuff, the scene in his quarters with the Klingon and tensions are rising. And there's a couple moments where, you know, various characters kind of look at him and he kind of shrugs and goes, I don't know. And I was like, that's kind of weird. Why is he so like that?
Yeah. If I was to say, you know, like, obviously I'm not bent out of shape that Ortegas didn't have a lot to do, but in my head, I'm kind of like, Pike always seemed like he was standing halfway out the door and Ortegas just sort of walked through the hallways giving people finger guns in my head. Like, and then, I mean, the only thing I really want of Pike is more shots of his kitchen.
Yes.
Just the interior design, like, gotta say, mad props to the set designers. You all basically made a space IKEA catalog come to life. Just absolutely wonderful blend of 1960s futurist artwork and architecture and everything. It was just really cool to see. Mm-hmm. I love the gas fireplace griddle thing he's got. A 300 person exploration cruiser, and the captain gets what is most likely like 7 to 10 berths to make his like amazing kitchen.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if we want to get into the canon of it all, then you look at Kirk's much more modest accommodations. I really hope they write that in at the end of this series when and if Kirk takes command. He's like, oh, shrink this thing down. We can fit like 8 more guys in here.
Yeah. Well, I feel like the crew complement in TOS is given as just about double of what it is currently. So I could headcanon that right now a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm going to say something that might be a little bit anathema to a lot of Star Trek fans. Earlier when I was saying that, like, they've done a really good job of I think, setting things up that we see the payoff later in TOS. Mm-hmm. I think it's also okay to ignore some things in TOS, not big canon events, big things that happen. But for example, the big one that a lot of people cite is Pike in the cage, right? Talking about his yeoman. I like her enough, but I can't get used to having a woman on the bridge. I think we're okay to pretend he never actually said that. I'm okay taking an episode like City on the Edge of Forever, and when they're on the planet, and Uhura turns to Captain Kirk and says, "Captain, I'm frightened." I think we're okay kind of forgetting that that happened and accepting that this Uhura is not the character who would say that. So, yeah, there's my hot take. Some things you can just ignore.
And on that hot take, I think we can call it a wrap here on our season two retrospective on Star Trek's Strange New Worlds. I am so happy that we got a nice send off, that we've got 10 more episodes of really, really good Star Trek. And I think there's more to talk about in the future. So if there are things you want to continue talking about with this season, we would love to hear more, and we can dive deep into some of those extra things that we 100% missed, because those 10 episodes, my goodness, they crammed a whole log in there, didn't they?
And they went by fast.
Oh, that's the thing, right? Yeah. So though we might not necessarily have a lot of new Star Trek to talk about in the near future, at the same time, there's always Star Trek to talk about. So you can find us on our Positively Trek Facebook page. And until next time, stay positive.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.